නමෝ තස්සේ භගවතෝ අරහතෝ සම්මා සම්බුද්දස්සේ නමෝ තස්සේ භගවතෝ අරහතෝ සම්මා සම්බුද්දස්සේ නමෝ තස්සේ භගවතෝ අරහතෝ සම්මා සම්බුද්දස්සේ. We were discussing one interesting sutta, which is called Dvaitanupassana Sutta, available in the Sutta Nipata. Basically, here Buddha, in a way, give us the aim of our practice, defines the aim of our practice, the goal of our practice. Actually, we all know that the goal is, in a way, the Nibbana, realization of Nibbana. Now, here actually, Buddha give a kind of a practical approach to that. And while we are in the mundane, the worldly side, we can do a kind of a contemplation, and that gives us more understanding. And then that understanding leads us to another contemplation, which is fairly lies on the supramundane type of understanding, supramundane side, in a way, Lokika and the Lokottara. Lokika is the kind of the mundane in this world, and we do the contemplation, we do the practice, and that leads to a supramundane understanding. And there are, to promote that, there are contemplations to that as well. So likewise, there are two contemplations every time, and this sutta in that sense gives us a kind of a contemplative approach. Various different kinds of contemplations are there, and those contemplations are highly regarded, and they will lead us to a thorough understanding. And as a result of each and every contemplation, Buddha say one either becomes an arahant, or if there are any residues of the defilements, one can become an anagami, non-returner. So to that extent, these contemplations are so powerful. But on the other hand, we can't come to these contemplations immediately. So you may have to start with the basics, practicing, say, starting with having faith, and then you are getting some understanding about the teaching, getting some faith on that, and then recognizing some good teachers, and then approaching, and then start striving, and then start practicing mindfulness. As a result of that, you are able to develop certain amount of mindfulness, and now you may have certain amount of concentration, and you have to develop that concentration. And once that concentration is available, now it's a matter of further using that concentration to recognize various phenomena so that you are able to understand their true nature by looking at their behavior. So yatha bhuta jnana dassana. So you are using various qualities. In one sense, you are using your effort. The other sense, you have very good faith, and you are balancing your faculties, and you have mindfulness and the concentration. And using all these faculties, now you are trying to develop wisdom. Wisdom also as a faculty. Now, as we continue in this practice, so we may reach these goals. We may reach these, the higher kind of contemplations, and that is what the theme of this sutta. So, what are these higher contemplations? In a way, the whole practice is somewhat summarized into these contemplations, and the first one is the Four Noble Truths. Yeah, Buddha mentioned if the suffering and the source of suffering, or the origin of suffering, is one contemplation, and the cessation of suffering and the path leading to the cessation of suffering is the other side or other contemplation. The first contemplation is in the mundane side. The other two contemplations are very much in the supramundane side. Then Buddha talks, explains about the acquisitions or upadhi. All the suffering arises because of the acquisitions. So we develop an ego, we develop a self, we develop a kind of a personality using various different kinds of facts, either it may be material or immaterial. And once they are there, using them, so one is able to develop an ego. You can become a special person, a VIP. So those are the upadis, those are the acquisitions, and recognizing them actually makes us unhappy, makes us unstable, and sort of is, even though they seems like giving us kind of stability, what we are actually holding is very unstable, inconstant processes. Ultimately, we get into trouble if we are holding them strongly. So acquisitions are leading to suffering, and if we are able to abandon all acquisitions, remainderless fading away and cessation of acquisitions, Buddha says there is no origination of suffering. So that's the other contemplation. So that is another duet Buddha explains in this Dvaitanupassana Sutta. Then the third one is called ignorance, where the whole mass of suffering is because of ignorance. Ignorance as the cause of suffering. Yang kinchi dukkhang sambhuti sabbang avijja paccaya. And on the other hand, if one is able to overcome or completely abandon this avijja, the ignorance, then there is no suffering. There is no origination of suffering. So that is another way of looking at the path. And so that is another contemplation. Then last time we discussed about the fourth one, that is the volitional activities. So volitional activities as a cause of suffering. Sankhara. So we recognize on that day there are different kinds of formations are there. Bodily formations, verbal formations, mental formations. And all actually have two levels, very subtle level and the gross level. Anyway, all are causing suffering. So if we are able to kind of sabba sankhara samatha, so if you are able to you are sort of calming down all formations, so that means you are able to maintain a very quiet mind, very relaxed mind, restful mind. There are no generation of formations, so that is in a way the nibbana, the nibbanic experience, where all the formations are very much like tranquil. Sankharanantveva asesa viraga nirodha natti dukkhasa sambhavo. So that is the fourth contemplation actually Buddha mentioned. So when we are continuing our practice, we may in a way summarize our practice into any of these contemplations. Now we already cover four such contemplations. One is with respect to Four Noble Truths. Another one with respect to acquisitions. The other one with respect to ignorance. And the last one we discussed is the formations. Now we can get into the other one. So that is what we call as the consciousness. Yang kinchi dukkhang sambhuti sabbang vinyana paccaya. So whatever the suffering originates is all conditioned by consciousness. And vinyanasattveva asesa viraga nirodha natti dukkhasa sambhavo. So with the remainderless fading away and cessation of consciousness, there is no origination of suffering. Now consciousness related, though, we are looking at from the angle of consciousness. So we all know that there are five aggregates, five clinging aggregates. We all understood the form aggregate, the feelings aggregate, perceptions aggregate, formations aggregate, and the consciousness aggregate. Now, here Buddha gave a kind of a summary with respect to the consciousness aggregate. And here actually we can understand what is consciousness. So there's a very interesting dialogue between Venerable Sariputta and the Venerable Mahakottita available in Mahavedala Sutta, Majjhima Nikaya. This question is asked, so what is consciousness? Vinyanam vinyananti avaso vuchyati kittavatanuko avaso vinyananti vuchyati. Consciousness is said, friend, with reference to what is consciousness said. So this is a question asked by Venerable Kottita, and Venerable Sariputta answers as vijanati vijanati tiko avaso tasma vinyananti vuchyati. It cognizes, friend, that is why consciousness is said. So the ability of the consciousness in that sense is the cognition. suppose that there are many items available and you want to select one, and so you are approaching your mind, you are focusing your mind, you are paying attention, and now you recognize it and you select it. So all that is actually based upon the activity of consciousness. So among many, you are able to recognize, cognize one object, which is your selection, and now you approach it, maybe you are taking it to your hand. So all that is promoted by this consciousness ability to distinguishly recognize something. So this distinction, the function of distinction, selecting one thing from many, is part of the consciousness function. And here actually Venerable Sariputta gives an interesting example, Kincha Vajat Vijanati. So he is explaining what cognize. Sukhantipi Vijanati, Dukkhantipi Vijanati, Adukkama Sukhantipi Vijanati. Vijanati ko avso tasma vijnananti ucchati. Now he is giving here an example with respect to feelings. So in our body there are different kinds of feelings arise time to time. And at times there are happy feelings, pleasurable feelings. So you can distinctly know, okay, now this body is going through a pleasant feeling. Sometimes it may go through some pain, itching, kind of a painful feeling. So you can distinctly recognize within this body, at this particular place, there is a pain. So this distinction, distinctly recognizing a particular kind of a pain, particular kind of a feeling. So that is function of consciousness, that is the cognition. And suppose there are various different kinds of equanimous feelings and various maybe even painful feelings. But if you want to properly focus your attention and recognize equanimous feelings, that also you can recognize. Among many other things, you can recognize, okay, there is an equanimous feeling at this particular place. So this properly at that moment recognition is function of this consciousness. And there are other interesting examples are given. Say, for example, you are eating something. So while you are chewing it, probably you can recognize, oh, this is a little salty. Or you can recognize, oh, this is little tastier. Or sometimes it may be a little bitter. So likewise, different kinds of tastes are there. Among different kinds of taste, so what is the exact taste right now you are experiencing? So that you can actually recognize, and that functionality is the function of consciousness. And now there's another interesting question asked by Venerable Mahakottita. Yachaoso panya yancha vinyanam ime dhamma sansatta udahu visansatta. Now there is consciousness as well as the wisdom. Are these states conjoined or completely disjoined? Are they separate or are they one? Is there any possibility of separating them? Or is there any way to understand how are there any conjoined? Are there any link between them? And then actually Venerable Sariputta answers, Yachauso panya yancha vinyanam ime dhamma sansatta no visansatta. So he answers, wisdom and consciousness friend, these states are conjoined, not disjoint. So they are conjoined. They are always working very much together. And it is not possible to kind of separate them. Now, further question then asks, So yanchauso pajanati tang vijanati yang vijanati tam pajanati. So first you cognize and then you can say you understand it. And once you understand it, that obviously means that you are cognizing it. So they are very much like going hand in hand. So distinctly recognizing is one part of the wisdom. Say when we are calling as Dhamma Vichaya. So we are trying to distinctly recognize various phenomena, they are details. So in one sense we can say we are using the ability of consciousness. On the other hand, we are developing the wisdom. So they are going hand in hand. Now, yanchavaso panya yancha vinyanam imesan dhammanam sansatthanam no visansatthanam king nana karanati. Now the question is asked, so then why, if they are fairly conjoined, then what is the difference? Then Venerable Sariputta answers, yachavaso panya yancha vinyanam imesan dhammanam sansatthanam no visansatthanam panya bhavetabba vinyanam parinyaya. And one needs to develop wisdom in order to fully understand consciousness. So that means we need to understand the function of the consciousness. And in order to do that, we need wisdom. So there should be another faculty, that is the wisdom faculty we need to develop. More and more we are able to develop wisdom, we can understand the function of consciousness. So the consciousness function is very subtle, very deceiving, and that's why Buddha in a way give a simile of a magician to the consciousness. Mayupamancha vinyana. So the magician can show various tricks, he can play various tricks, he can hide maybe pigeons in his secret pockets and immediately he can show a pigeon. He may have secret halls from which he may take out a flower. He may have another, say, secret locker. Immediately he may take out a rabbit. So likewise, so he can play various tricks, and the weavers might think, oh, these are real things. They appear like real, but they are magic. They are all illusions. They are all tricks. But we are not possible to understand that. That's a problem. But on the other hand, if one is able to look at them closely, probably you are going behind the screen and you are investigating this situation very carefully, probably you are able to reveal all those tricks. You might notice these hidden pockets, you might notice these hidden flowers, you might notice this whatever the pouch, pigeons, flowers, rabbits, you might notice them, how they are carefully kept, secretly kept before the beginning of the show. And during the show, time to time, when the audience has taken his attention, so immediately he takes these different objects and show a magic. So one needs fair amount of investigation, fair amount of understanding to recognize this completely illusionary performance of the magician. So similarly, if we are able to develop wisdom, so that wisdom helps us to understand this illusory nature of the consciousness. So in order to understand consciousness, therefore Buddha mentioned, you need to develop wisdom. Now, another sense we need to understand, very interesting, another sutta is available in the Halidhakani Sutta, in the Sangyutta Nikaya, Kanda Sangyutta. So there are Halidhakani, one householder. He's asking a question, why Okasari, why one is called roams about in a home? Why one is called a person who is roaming about in a home? And then Venerable Mahakachana gives the explanation and he says, Rupa dhatu ko gahapati vinyanasso ko. Rupa dhatu raga vinibandhancha pana vinyanang okasariti vuchati. So he explains this form element, householder, is the home of consciousness. One whose consciousness is shackled by lust for the form element is called one who roams about in a home. Now say for example, you are hearing a very beautiful song. You get fascinated about it. You get really attracted to it. And you are further and further, you get closer to it, you start holding it, you start appreciating it, you are fully bound to it. And now your consciousness is actually associating that sound. We can say the form aggregate. Suppose you are eating very delicious food, so you forget about everything, might probably you even close your eyes, you want to 100% completely taste this food, completely immersed in that. So we can say now the consciousness completely absorbed into this form aggregate or the taste in this case. Maybe you are going through a very good sensation, very good tangible. The situation is the same, you can get absorbed to it. You are completely absorbed into that experience. So that seems, in that sense, this body or the sensation, contact, becomes the home for consciousness. And likewise, the form aggregate can become a home for our consciousness. And further it is explained, Vedana dhatu ko gahapati vinyana soko, various different kinds of feelings. Say you are going through a really painful experience. Your full attention is there, you are fully absorbed to that, you are completely suffering. And in that sense, the vinyana is fairly residing with the feeling aggregate. Similarly, assume that you are thinking something and various different kinds of signs appear in your mind. Your mind is fully occupied by various perceptions, various marks, various kinds of shapes. So mind is again and again entangled by all different kinds of shapes, all different kinds of images, mental images. So consciousness has a very good home in the perceptions aggregate. On the other hand, assume that you are thinking. Different thoughts are there, so you promote thinking. You are thinking with respect to the past, you are regretting about something has happened. Now you are projecting towards the future, you are imagining, you are hoping, you are wishing. And probably with respect to the present experience, further you are thinking. So thinking is going on, and ultimately even it is overthinking, it can become conceptual proliferation. So all that actually a very good station, very good foundation for consciousness to reside. So they are the formations aggregate is the home for consciousness. So you can see this consciousness needs a home to reside. So that is where it is footing. So what we call as the kind of established consciousness, patittita vinyana. So there's a term called patittita vinyana, explained in Dhamma, where consciousness is established. Either in the form aggregate, either in the feelings aggregate, either in the perceptions aggregate, or in the formations aggregate. Same thing is explained in the Upaya Sutta, in Kanda Samyutta, where Buddha explains, Rupa upayang va bhikkave vinyanam tittamanam tittaya, rupa rammanam rupa patittam nandupa sechanam, buddhing virulhing vepullang apajjaya. Monks, this form aggregate is a kind of an engagement, and that becomes an object for the consciousness. That is where it is established, that is where it is footing. Rupa rammanang, rupa patittang, nandupa sechanang. And while it is associating that, there is a kind of a delight arising. And as a result of that, it is further and further growing there, established there. Buddhing virulhing vepullang apajjaya. Now, it's very well footed, very well established in the form aggregate. So similarly, Buddha explains about the feeling aggregate, perceptions aggregate, and the formations aggregate. So all happens actually because of the lust. We have certain amount of craving towards the form aggregate, craving towards the feeling aggregate, failing towards perceptions aggregate, and craving towards formations aggregate. So the craving is in a way appearing like the root cause. So as a result of that, the consciousness get engaged with the form aggregate, get engaged with the feeling aggregate, linked or engaged with the perceptions aggregate, or engaged with the formations aggregate. Now, so what is the practice? So the practice causes to sort of reduce this engagement, minimize this engagement, and basically to ultimately to disengage, to destroy this link. Say for example, you are practicing Kayanupassana. So in the Kayanupassana, we are actually dealing with the form aggregate, and we are thoroughly trying to understand the form aggregate. Say we are looking at your body and different postures are there, so you are trying to establish mindfulness on those postures. So if you are practicing this for a longer time, probably you understand, okay, these are postures, it is not me, it is not myself, it is not I who go through it, it is the postures are there. Sometimes this body is standing, sometimes it is walking, sometimes it is sitting, sometimes it is lying down. So there are different bodily postures available. Other than these different bodily postures, there is no person. So that is one aspect we can develop. On the other hand, say you are developing anapanasati, mindfulness on breathing. So the body is breathing, so you are able to recognize it. When in-breath happens, you recognize, oh, now the in-breath is there. When out-breath happens, you recognize, now the out-breath is there. So there's a breathing body. It is not I am breathing, rather body is breathing. So you are in a way little developing a kind of perspective. So looking at things from a different angle. Looking at an experience from a different angle. You are not absorbed to that experience, you are not identified with that experience. Rather you are able to look at the experience objectively. There is breathing and you are looking at it. So that is the exact perception that Buddha expects us in the Four Noble Truths. There is suffering. There is cause of suffering. There is cessation of suffering. There is a path leading to the cessation of suffering. So there is. So you are in a way step back and look at it. So step back and look at it, recognizing it, understanding it. Rather than getting absorbed to it, rather than getting hooked up with it, rather than getting engaged with it, holding it, clinging it. Instead of doing that, you are able to step back, loosen your grip, but still looking at it thoroughly, but with a distance. So therefore in Kayanupassana, so this is the approach that we are developing. So while body is breathing, so you are able to understand it, you are able to recognize it. Probably as you are further developing, you are able to see different elements or different components of the body, bodily parts. So rather than looking at this body as myself or a unit, now you recognize, okay, this body consists of various bodily parts. It's a combination of various bodily parts assembled in a particular style, particular manner. Then we call it as a human. There are various bodily parts assembled in a certain manner. Say once it is assembled like that, say we are calling it as a dog. Different bodily parts are there, they are assembled together in a particular way, in a particular shape. Say then we are calling it a bird. So likewise, so different bodily parts are there. The way they are assembled causes us to give a different name. So names are there. So names are given by the man to distinctly recognize, to communicate with others. But those objects don't really have a name actually. They are merely combination of aggregates, accumulation of aggregates, assembly of aggregates. But we humans have given various names, various labels to distinctly recognize. But ultimately we get the perception, a wrong perception, okay, this particular object is one thing and there is an essence, there is a truth in this label. in this convention, in this name. So ultimately we completely get confused to the names, to the labels, to the conventions that we have created. We forget that these are merely labels. We forget these are merely labels or merely names, merely conventions, which humans have created for their own convenience. Rather, we think now these labels represent something unique, something very specific, something which is substantial, and it has a core. So this is a wrong perception we have. Now, with vipassana practice, so we are able to penetrate this illusion slowly. So once you develop fair amount of mindfulness, you develop fair amount of concentration, and using that concentrated, mindful, balanced mind, now you start investigation. So you are investigating the body. Now various elements are there: hardness, softness, roughness, smoothness, heaviness, lightness. So those qualities are there, those characteristics are there. Then maybe the fluidity, the flowing nature, the kind of cohesion. So those characteristics are there. And then you recognize different kinds of heat and the cold. So those characteristics are there. And sometimes the motion happens, the movement happens, vibrations happen. So you recognize that. So these are the very fundamental characteristics of this physical world, and you may be able to recognize that within the body and as an experience. And more you understand that, so you may get a insight, there are other than these element characteristics, there is no essence, there is no inner core, there is no self, but a function of elements is there. Probably you are able to use the same insight to the outside, and inferentially you can understand, this is the same thing, there are also the elements are available. That's a function is there. Elements are always functioning. Other than that, there is no any intrinsic core, there is no any intrinsic self. So that is something that you start experiencing. Now, as you are continuing like this, so Buddha mentioned, so this difference between ajjata and bahidda, internal and external, becomes very sort of faded. You can't have a big differentiation between the internal and external. So it is the function of the consciousness that we create this distinction. We want to have a boundary. So what is internal, what is external? How are you deciding that? So we are expecting such a strong, rigid boundary because of the function of consciousness. But the more we are practicing, so this boundary become blurred. So these lines become very blurred. It's very difficult to understand what is internal, what is external, because they are the similar. Their characteristics are very similar. Say for example, the earth element, the internal earth element, which is what you are experiencing within the body, and the external earth element, what you are experiencing outside, are very similar. There is no difference. So the more you understand that, Buddha say, so your lust become less. Iti ajjattikam va patavidhatu yecha bahirava patavidhatu patavidhatu revesa. So internal earth element and the external earth element are the very same earth element. So more you look at like that, Buddha say, patavidhatu ya chittang virajeti. So your mind become not interested about this earth element. So similarly, the practice, the element practice, the dhatu manasikara, leads us to have a kind of a uninterested or disinterested attitude towards all the different kinds of elements. Now the form become not much interested thing. So you are not get attracted to sounds, you are not get attracted to sights, smells, tastes, tangibles, because you understood their true nature. So mind now has a sort of dispassion. So this dispassion leads to relinquishment. So time to time, So your mind gets released. But the unfortunate problem is that, as we discussed, the consciousness has four houses, four homes, but we are now able to release it only from one house. Through the Kayanupassana, we are able to release it from the form house. But there are three other houses available. So, because of our ignorance, probably we get trapped in another home. Consciousness gets trapped in another home. Maybe feeling aggregate, maybe perceptions aggregate, maybe the formations aggregate. Suppose you are able to properly handle it, you are very clever, you are properly be prepared during your meditation, the form aggregate slowly fades away, your body starts disappearing, you can't experience your body, very, very subtle. Now, very much like the influence of the form aggregate has disappeared, so there, now there is no footing for consciousness for the in the form aggregate. Assume now you are looking at feelings. Little feelings are there. Maybe you feel happy. That is also a feeling. You feel little drowsy. That's another feeling. Maybe you feel little lethargic. That's also another feeling. Maybe you feel disinterested. That's another feeling. You feel equanimous. Another feeling. You feel happy. Another feeling. So likewise, now you are looking at the situation or the experience from the point of feelings, and they are also merely feelings. So slowly, slowly, you are separating from the feelings. You are not getting absorbed to them. You are not calling them as my feelings, but they are merely feelings. The more you are able to look at like that, so slowly, slowly, so you are able to abandon that even. So feelings become faded away. You are not much provoked or interested for pleasurable feelings. You are not really kind of disturbed by the painful feelings. You don't feel lethargic onto the equanimous feelings. Rather, all different kinds of feelings are there, but you can have the capacity to look at them properly, look at them equanimously, look at from a distance. Now you get the proper perspective about the feelings. As a result of that, feelings start fade away. And you become dispassionate towards these feelings. Now suppose you are practicing Chittanupassana, Dhammanupassana. So you are understanding the different kinds of chitta, different kinds of consciousness. Say lustful thought. So you recognize lustful thought as a lustful thought. You recognize maybe a renunciative thought. You want to give up something. You want to give it away. That is another thought. You recognize that thought also. Say you are understanding little resentment, little frustration, kind of agitation in the mind. Maybe a little bit of unhappy situation, unhappy state in the mind, and even aversion. So all these you understand as merely thoughts. As a result of that, they may go away. And there may be loving kindness. That's also another thought. So you understand that and you let it go. So likewise, the more you understand thoughts are as merely thoughts, so they can't stay in the mind for a longer period of time. So they also start fading away. So the mind become more spacious, and there could be various signs appear. You might remember someone's face, you might remember someone's activity. There may be some beautiful objects which you are being attracted in the past. Maybe some projections towards the future, you are imagining something. Maybe a kind of an incident going to happen in the future, you are imagining that. Likewise, when the feelings are faded away, there's a higher possibility, different, small, or very distinct signs might appear in the mind. So we should not get fooled by them, because our eyes are closed and they are merely illusions. They are merely like hallucinations. So those visuals actually have to be abandoned. So we should not get carried away by them. We should not give prominence to them. We should not give any name to them or get attracted to them. We should be dispassionate towards them. If we are able to properly handle like that, they also disappear. So the mind becomes very clear, quite spacious, kind of like transparent. Now, suppose you have already stopped thinking. One thought came, it has gone, another thought came, it also has gone. Now there is no thought. So there may be instances that you are experiencing, kind of thoughtless instances. But full awareness is there. Kind of awareness is there, but apart from the awareness, nothing is there. Now we are getting closer to this state. Rupa dhatu ya ko gahapati, yo chando, yo rago, ya nandi, ya tanha, ye upe upadana, chetaso adhittana, abhinivesa anusaya, te tathagatasa pahina, uchinna mulla, thala, vattukata, anabhavagata, ayating anuppada dhamma. And now Venerable Mahakachan explains to that Halidhikani household. So what happens in the minds of the Buddha? What happens in the mind of the Arhat? And how householder does one roam about homeless? The desire, lust, delight and craving, the engagement and clinging, the mental standpoints, adherences and underlying tendencies regarding the form aggregate, these have been abandoned by the Tathagata, cut off at the root, made like a palm stump, obliterated so that they are no more subject to future arising. Therefore, the Tathagata is called one who roams about homeless. So his consciousness is not associating the form aggregate. Form aggregate is no more a home for consciousness. So similar explanation is given for the feelings aggregate, perceptions aggregate and the formations aggregate. So that means the consciousness is no more associating homes. Therefore it is mentioned the Tathagata, the Arahant, is homeless. Now what is this homeless aspect of the mind? There's a very interesting explanation given in the Kevatta Sutta in Diga Nikaya, where Buddha gave a very comprehensive, very deep answer to this. So one monk asked the question, Katta apocha padavi tejo vayo nagadati, katta digancha rassancha anunthulang subha subhang, katta namancha rupancha asesang uparujjati. So this is the question, actually he asked the question a little different, but Buddha correct it, and then the correct question is like this. Where do earth and water, fire and wind, no footing find? Where is it that long and short, fine and coarse, pleasant and unpleasant, as well as name and form, are held in check? In a way, it is complete. Now, when we are thinking of different kinds of objects, when we are thinking of different kinds of physical objects, we always want to distinguish, and that is the characteristics of the consciousness. Now, in order to distinguish, we are putting various labels, various names. Apart from that, we give a kind of, either it is long, either it is short, either it is good or it is bad, either it is fat or it is lean, either it is tall or it is short. So likewise, so we have this dualistic way of analyzing things. So when we are living in this physical world, so this dualistic way of looking at things, either it is good or bad, it is closer or very far away, or it is pleasant or unpleasant, I like it or I don't like it, either it is fine or it is coarse, either it is internal or it is external, either it is long or it is short. So these are all different aspects happened because of our measurement. Now, the question is, so where are these earth, water, fire, wind, so those are the elements, where they are not fine footing. And more than that, all those measurements, all those dualistic way of analyzing things, all those measurements are very much like completely ceased. And not only that, even the nama rupa, the name and form, does not appear. That also has gone away. So is there any possibility of achieving this? So where do this happen? So this is the question. Now the answer is the interesting point. That's a more profound answer given in the Kevada Sutta. Vinyanam anidassanam anantam sabbato pabham. Etta apocha patavi tejo vayo nagadati. Etta digancha rassancha anun tholam subasubam. Etta namancha rupancha asesam uparujjati. Vinyanasa nirodhena ethe tang uparujjati iti. Now, vinyanam anidassanam. So at this state, the consciousness is non-manifestive. So in this non-manifestive consciousness, there is nothing represented. And anantam, and it is boundless, it is endless. Sabbato pabang, and it is lustrous in all sides. And in such case, there is no patavi, apo, tejo, vayo, fine footing. Here is that earth and water, fire and air, no footing find. And as mentioned previously, so all those measurements, all those labels, all those names, all those distinctions, dualistic nature, all that is gone. Digancha, rassancha, anung, thulang, suba, asuba, that all gone. Fine and coarse, pleasant, unpleasant, that all have gone. They does not exist. Eta namancha rupancha asesang uparujyati. And the name and form is also cut off without exception. And vinyanasa nirodhena ethetang uparujyati. When consciousness has ceased, there are held in check herein. Now there are some questions arise in this explanation. So there are one thing called vinyanam anidassana. Another thing is called vinyanasa nirodhena. So these things are two things. Now vinyanasa nirodhena, in that actually this vinyana is the constructed consciousness. This is the prepared consciousness. So that is what we already discussed. So when vinyana finds a home, it's a constructed consciousness. When it is associating a form aggregate, it gets constructed there. It is properly prepared there, established there. It associates something. It is conditioned. It is colored. So that is the constructed consciousness. And we call it as abhisankata vinyana. Further constructed consciousness. And say it associates feelings. So it gets absorbed to consciousness. It gets absorbed to feelings. It gets colored by that feeling. And it further aggravates that feeling. And it takes as my feeling. So all that actually shows that conditioned consciousness. Consciousness become more conditioned, more colored. So that is the prepared consciousness. And say your consciousness is associating perceptions. So the more the consciousness is occupied by perceptions, it become colored by those perceptions. It become conditioned by those perceptions. It's occupied by those perceptions. So it is a conditioned perception. It's a conditioned consciousness. So that is why it is called abhisankata vijnana, or the conditioned consciousness. Say there are thoughts going on, so you are thinking. Different thoughts are happening. One thought, another thought, we are weaving thoughts. So thoughts are now slowly occupying the mind. So the consciousness become colored, conditioned by those thoughts. Completely absorbed to those thinking, now overthinking. And very much like invaded by the consciousness, invaded by the thoughts. So that invasion of thoughts basically shows different kinds of consciousness which is fully conditioned, and this conditioned consciousness has to be seized. That is why it is mentioned vijnanasa nirodhena. So that means the consciousness has become homeless. In that sense, the conditioned consciousness has completely ceased. So what is the available consciousness? So that is why it is called anidassana vijnana. It's a kind of an appatittita vijnana, where now consciousness is not established at any place, at any object, and it does not represent anything. So it is non-manifestive consciousness. So we need to clearly understand these two possibilities explained in this sutta, where we are talking about the abandonment of the conditioned consciousness, constructed consciousness, abhisankata vijnana, which is the consciousness where we usually have a consciousness which is conditioned, which is colored, which is associated to either form, to the feeling, to the perceptions, to the formations. That is the engaged kind of consciousness. So that has to be totally ceased. And once it is ceased, so that means all that earth, water, fire, wind, so they don't find any footing. And all different parameters, all different measurements which we are attributed to those elements, so that also gone. That means long, short, internal, external, pleasant, unpleasant, fine, rock, fine, coarse, all that is gone. And typically, this conditioned consciousness is entangled in the name and form. So if we come little further refined level, so this conditioned consciousness is entangled in the name and form. So that means if we are able to cease this conditioned consciousness, that means name and form also has to be ceased. So if all that is possible, now the experience is called non-manifestive consciousness or the unestablished consciousness. So that is the state we can say the Arahant is experiencing, where he is fully aware, but that consciousness is not manifestive. In that consciousness there is no name and form getting appeared. So he is not getting entangled to that name and form. So kind of a transparent, very lucid, very clear kind of mind. So that state, anantang, it is limitless, it is endless, because the object is the one makes the mind with a boundary. So when your consciousness is bound to an object, it is creating a boundary. It is limited. But now there are no objects at all. Mind is completely empty. As a result of that, your awareness is boundless, endless, anantam. Sabbato pabam. So everywhere it is lustrous. So here the lustre is actually the wisdom lustre. Panya pabha. So there are suttas explaining what are the different kinds of lustre. Either Suryapabha, either Chandapabha, Agnipabha, or Panyapabha. Suryapabha, the lustre of the sun. Chandapabha, lustre of the moon. Agnipabha, lustre of the fire. And the Panyapabha, lustre of the wisdom. So here the lustre is actually the wisdom. So we have developed the insight, we have developed the vipassana. So that has given us a lot of wisdom to the mind. As you can remember, so we have to develop wisdom in order to understand consciousness. Panya bhavetabba vijnanam parinyaya. So now we have developed wisdom. So the Arahant has fully developed wisdom. So he has completely penetrated the consciousness. He has fully understood the consciousness. So the established consciousness is completely abandoned. Conditioned consciousness has completely ceased, because he thoroughly understood. He has thorough wisdom. So his mind is basically lustrous wisdom. So this is how the complete abandonment of suffering happens. So now we can go back to the Dvaitanupassana Sutta. Whatever the dukkha happens, whatever the suffering happens, it is because of that conditioned consciousness. If we are able to completely abandon that conditioned consciousness, there is no suffering. Yankinji dukkhaṁ sambhavati sabbhaṁ viññāna paccaya. Viññānasa nirodhena natthi dukkhasa sambhavo. Whatever suffering originates is all because of that conditioned consciousness. All conditioned by consciousness. With the cessation of that conditioned consciousness, there is no origination of suffering. Etamādīnavan nyatva dukkhaṁ viññāna paccaya. Viññānūpa samā bhikkhu nicchāto parinibbuto. So having understood this danger, suffering is conditioned by consciousness. By stilling of that conditioned consciousness, a bhikkhu become hungerless, that means craving free, and he becomes attained nibbana. So you can see it's a very, very profound teaching here given with respect to the consciousness by the Buddha. And so you can see one can't understand this as a beginner. You need some amount of practice to come to this. Even theoretical understanding is difficult. And one needs fair amount of practice in order to have kind of a taste about it. In order to have some kind of feeling about it. And once you have it, probably, then you are able to understand what is mentioned in this part. So the consciousness, how it can become conditioned, how it is associating different homes, and how the inside practice slowly, slowly reduce that engagement, reduce that lust, reduce that attachment, and ultimately consciousness become freed. There we call it as unconditioned or non-manifestative consciousness or unestablished consciousness. Anidassana vijnana, appatitthita vijnana. So that is the state of the mind where the arahant is experiencing. But time to time, when a vipassana yogi is practicing, when his mind is fully lustrous with the wisdom, even for a short period, he may be able to experience it. We can say the perfect level, perfect state is possible for the arahants, but for the others who are practicing vipassana, time to time, when the wisdom is enough to liberate the mind, to abandon all the houses, all those homes, so the consciousness can become unestablished. Consciousness can become a non-manifestative, but only for a short period of time. Because he still has lust, he still has anger, he still has delusion. So when they start growing, when they start appearing, again you lose the luster of the wisdom. Again you become full. Again you get established consciousness. Again the name and form start appearing in the mind. So that is what we need to understand. So the more we practice, the more the wisdom has to be developed. So that wisdom helps us to thoroughly understand the function of this conditioned consciousness. So that ultimately we may be able to maintain this non-manifestative consciousness for a longer period of time. Okay, with that, I like to conclude today's sutta teaching session. Now, if you have any question, you can ask now.
Thank you, Bhante.
Okay.
Anyone would like to ask a question?
Okay, you can think about today's sermon then. If there is no question, we can wind up the session. I feel things are clear, or if you need any time to contemplate, and then you can ask those questions maybe next week. If there are no questions, then we'll wind up the session. Okay, one question is there.
Yeah, you can talk.
Tirvan Sarnai Bhante.
Yes.
Yeah, Bhante, so when we become the observer, like you're walking and then you are just observing yourself, and while you are doing other things, you just merely become the observer. In that condition, is it still conditioned vijnana, or?
So that's the thing. So basically, so we can't immediately make it completely free, completely non-manifestative. So what we do is now fairly not engaged, fairly making a distance. So the link is very weak in a way. It is not we are thoroughly holding, thoroughly grasping. Rather now a soft awareness is there. So you are able to aware of what is really going on. And now you are observing it, now you are thoroughly investigating it. So that further helps you to disengage. So the mind become more dispassionate because you are understanding the true nature. So the mind become dispassionate. So the dispassion develops now. So the more this dispassion is developed, ultimately you lose the grip. You break the linkage and mind become completely freed. So it
okay.
has to happen.
Yes.
It has to happen with respect to the body, the feelings, perceptions, and the formations. And if we are able to completely free like that, then we may get a very clear emptiness, a state of sunyata, state of emptiness, where it is fairly perfect in a way. We can't say every time we are experiencing that, but during the practice, we are maintaining a very relaxed awareness. Ultimately, it gives the ability to develop wisdom. That wisdom actually helps to make it more and more cleansed, kind of consciousness, very clear consciousness, and ultimately non-manifestative consciousness, where nothing is represented
okay.
in the mind. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I feel like sometimes, you know, when you become the observer, you are in a different level, not in your mind level, it's somewhere else, like you are not in the same level you were before, so you are in a different level and observing everything.
Mm-hmm.
So mind is not completely quiet, but
mm-hmm.
No proliferation.
Correct.
Either. So mm-hmm. that's why I was wondering whether I understood what you said.
Right.
Yeah. Thank you very much, Bhante.
Right. Okay, if there are no more questions, then we'll wind up the session. We have spent almost 1 hour, and so all the merits that we have gathered, let's share with all the past relatives, with all the celestial beings and whoever in need of merits. And we wish these merits help us also to understand the teaching of the Buddha. So we'll recite the traditional verses. Ettavata chamhehi sambhatam punya sampadam sambe deva anumodantu sabba sampatti siddhya. Ettavata chamhehi sambhatam punya sampadam sambe bhuta anumodantu sabba sampatti siddhya. Ettavata chamhehi sambhatam punya sampadam sambe satta anumodantu sabba sampatti siddhya. Akasattha ca bummattha deva naga mahiddika punyantam anumoditva chiram rakkhantu sasanam. Akasattha ca bummattha deva naga mahiddika punyantam anumoditva chiram rakkhantu desanam. Akasattha ca bummattha deva naga mahiddika punyantam anumoditva chiram rakkhantu mamparam. Idam vo nyati nang hotu sukita huntu nyatayo. Idam vo nyati nang hotu sukita huntu nyatayo. Idam vo nyati nang hotu sukita huntu nyatayo. Imina punya kammena mame bala samagamu. Satang samagamo hotu yava nibbana pattiya. Imina punya kammena mame bala samagamu. Satang samagamo hotu yava nibbana pattiya. ඉමිනා පුඤ්ඤකම්මේන මාමේ බාල සමාගමෝ සතං සමාගමෝ හෝතු යාව නිබ්බාන පත්තියා සාදු සාදු සාදු